Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. How's the jet lag?
I'm tired like early in the evening, but I've slept ever since we got back Saturday. I think I went to bed at 6:30 or 7 and slept till 7 the next morning. Sunday night I went to bed at 9 and slept until 6. Last night I went to bed at 8:30 and slept until 5:45 this morning.
Oh.
But last night to get to the 8 was tough. About 5 I started fading and getting a little crabby and but largely being able to sleep. Some of it is just I just lay there and say, "Lord, I'm going to sleep." And I just, you know, pray and try and go to sleep, but it's been better.
Yeah.
You know, I read an article when we got back. I was trying to stay awake on Saturday, and there was an article on jet lag, and it said that when people sleep more hours per night, so say somebody sleeps 7-8 hours, your body has to figure out how to take 7 or 8 hours and move it back to where it should be because you've adjusted it over here for this time zone that you're in. So your body's got to figure out how to take 7 or 8 hours and move it back, and it's very difficult for your body. If you sleep less hours, say like 4 or 5 hours a night, it's less time that your body has to move around, and so you actually can get over jet lag faster. They say people who travel constantly tend to sleep only 4 or 5 hours a night and then take a nap or two during the day. And then that's how they get over jet lag faster, is their body's used to recharging on these little naps and then only having to move the small amount of time back to another window. I thought that was interesting, given that prior to the trip, I only was sleeping about 4 hours a night. For whatever reason, I think it was because there was so much going on and I was trying to accomplish so much. I wasn't sleeping that much. And so I think then my body, because when we went there, I didn't have really bad jet lag either. In fact, I started sleeping normal the minute we got there. I was shocked that...
And you were one of the first up because of the devotional time sharing each
night. Yeah, I mean, I was really shocked. I went to bed, I think the first night we were there, I went to bed at 8 o'clock maybe, right after dinner. Took a shower, went to bed, woke up at 6 in the morning. And I was like, wow, that's weird. I didn't even wake up.
Yeah.
And then every night it was like that. I just kept sleeping. In fact, I was sleeping better and better. Like, I was like, oh, I could sleep till 8 or 9 this morning, if, you know, but we had to be up at 6. So, yeah, it's been interesting. The jet lag has not been that bad.
And what's that verse about sweet sleep or something is from the Lord or something? It's kind of that concept or that idea that when you do sleep well, it is a gift from God, so...
Yeah, but my wife says that when she comes to bed, because she comes to bed about 10:30, and I've been going to bed, like I said, 8:30. She said when she comes to bed, I am like a rock. She said she turned the light on, she had a little music on, she was doing something in the bathroom. She said, you didn't move. She said, you are like a tree fell in the forest and you can't move it.
I'm the opposite. If there's a light on down the hallway, it wakes me up.
No, I'm good. So, yeah, the jet lag.
Who dropped that pin on the floor? You woke me up.
The jet lag is good. I think from one end to the other, you know, jet lag being included in this, you know, being able to sleep and all that, because that's so important on the trips, is being able to sleep, especially when, well, you know, from yours and my standpoint, when you are facilitating and when you're leading and guiding and trying to make decisions. It's much harder when you're not sleeping you don't get that sleep. And so that included, I think this was a really great trip.
Right.
I mean, probably, you know, every trip has its different dichotomy and different makeup and different that. But this trip, I would just say this in all honesty. I left for this trip thinking, this may be one of the last times I go. You know, the kids are getting older. Things are going on. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. And I came back and said, I'd go back. So it was a good trip in terms of it really charged the batteries up, got me excited. But I also learned about myself, because I was really trying to be sensitive during this trip to my own heart and what was going on. And it was really, I had a fascinating conversation with a friend of mine who writes for a newspaper yesterday. And they said, so, you know, what was different about this trip? And I said, I was beyond the sights, the souvenirs, and the trinkets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more about experiencing the people, the relationships, and those kinds of things. And so that got me excited.
Yeah.
I was more excited about the relationships on the trip than I was, per se, going to Capernaum or going to... And I think some of that might have helped because on this trip we had a fair amount of new folks.
Right,
I think 22, 23 people had never been to Israel
first-timers.
Before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, when you go somewhere and you know you hear the voices going, I just can't believe this. Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. I couldn't even have imagined it was like this. And you keep hearing that over and over again.
Yeah.
And you get to walk along somebody and help them process that. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. There are many great aspects of the trip. Now, has the home thermostat been turned on?
Well, we moved the bed. So my wife rearranged the bedroom in the process of my being gone. She painted the bedroom, painted the bathroom. It looks really nice. And moved the stuff, but she moved the bed in front of the window. And so it's because it's cold outside. It's cold in the head of the bed.
Yeah, I know. When we, upon our return, I think we were at Newark or one of the airports or getting close to returning. It was certainly on that last day, but it was like a blur because you kind of wake up that morning at 6:30 or so, and then it's a full day, and then you have your farewell dinner, and you get to the airport. Now it's 10, 11 at night. You get on a flight, and then, you know, you lose or gain 8 hours, however it works. But at one point, we saw that with Sleeton in Illinois and we had been experiencing like 92, 88, 93, you know, 79 was like, oh, it's getting a little chilly today. We had shorts on, T-shirts, great weather. We get back, and we're like, what do you mean it was 38
degrees? Yeah, when we stepped off the jetway in Chicago, it was noticeably cold. Yeah. I was like, wow, is it cold? And it was the early in the morning, too. I think it was 4 a.m., whatever time it was. And so it was like, wow, is it cold here? I like it. It's been refreshing. I get up in the morning and go outside, and you just take that deep breath, and you go, oh, this is great. This is my kind of weather.
Well, Holly had the thermostats. I don't know, like at 65, and I'm like, it's so cold in this house. I said, 65, you know, typically 65 would be fine. You'd think, oh, you know, that's nice temperature to have. But, you know, so I've been wearing like the undershirt and the long sleeve shirt. It's just the adjustment again. But, of course, I think I had talked to a couple people that stayed behind, and they said, well, no, it was like 70s and 80s here, too. And then this whole weather front came in. So,
so 30, 31 trips you've been on.
28.
I thought it was more, though. I thought, including your Kay Arthur trip, that this would have taken you into the 30s.
No, this is, I think, 28, because I think somebody else...
You've been like
30.
A 28 for a while.
Yeah.
This is, we're not talking about your age. We're talking about trip numbers. Yeah. So in that many trips, what was different about this trip than other trips? Anything different? Anything where you thought, wow, this kind of took me by surprise, or...
Well, one thing I was really appreciative of, we almost entirely followed through on our itinerary and our plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many times things get derailed or situational things come up that, okay, let's, you know, divert or do this. So we got to keep to that, you know, I think everything but one, and that was because it was so overcrowded, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. But I was really glad to stay to the plan. I don't want to make comparisons because there's good and bad about every trip, or struggles, I would say, maybe not so much bad. But this was low maintenance, and so that wasn't very taxing. I thought what you were doing, your part of it, the teaching and the early morning devotionals and the transitional time and bringing the guitar added to the whole experience. God spoke to me kind of on the last couple days where I just wanted to reevaluate some of the choices and things that I'm doing and, you know, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness and, you know, prioritize that time with him, which I had been transitioning towards again, that you had known. It's been kind of a struggle with so many different things pulling on me. I just felt like, oh, I got to get my routine back. I mean, I want to be in a rut. I don't know what a rut is, you know. So there were some really neat experiences with some people, like you said, so many first-timers. And even some of the senior ones got different things out of it and appreciated. I mean, a lot of the great feedback. So I'm still, I haven't even sent out my, I do a series of emails. That just reminded me. I haven't done that yet. That'll happen today. But, you know, some really good connections and some sweet people, some dear couples that were a part of this that made it special.
Yeah, and there was a good, everybody kind of shepherded each other. I think that that's one of the things that in this trip, I felt like there was, you know, there was the normal kind of, hey, Mark, hey, Jason, hey, Mark, hey, Jason, you know, which were kind of normal questions. But by and large, you know, getting to different places, or hey, you need a water, or hey, let's sit down and get an ice cream. Okay, a lot of people were shepherding each other, and I thought that that was really great, caring for one another. I watched it on many levels. Getting up at the table at dinner time, I'm always watching little things. I'm always just kind of watching what people are doing, and I watched a lot of people get up and say, "Hey, do you want me to get you another piece of bread, or you want me to get you this or that, or you know, you would come with the juices. But, I mean, everybody was kind of trying to shepherd and help one another. And I thought that that was really, really good, and helping one another get to where they needed to be. And we even had, we had one person who was having some trouble with her hip, and she said, you know, hey, I'm going to stay back on this day in the hotel because I just need to get some rest. And I thought that that was a very bold and courageous thing to do, because it's very easy to say, well, I paid, I want to go out, I want to do these things. And then it does become difficult for the group. It really does. And it becomes hard to keep to the itinerary. It becomes hard to keep pace and all that. So I really appreciated that somebody said, you know, hey, you know, I'm just going to stay back and it'll be okay. And really, I thought that we kept not a brisk pace. We kept a good, relaxing pace. And we still saw everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we even had the free day where we took the rail as a group. And I think that that should be a part of every trip, because I think that people loved the adventure. I think that people loved kind of feeling like they were the captain of their own destiny. Yeah. But I also think, this came to me, is that I appreciate our guide, Eitan Ratov. Mm-hmm. Appreciate him to death. But I do think that we go to a place like Yad Vashem, and he kind of guides that process. And he's, you know, we walk around the grounds, and he shares about this, and he shares about this and that. And sure, our groups go into Yad Vashem alone, and they process that themselves. But the last thing that you need, and this is one of the things that I wrote down in my notebook after Yad Vashem, the last thing you need after you're in there and you feel all that weight and heaviness and you're trying to process that is to come out and get a guided tour of the trees and the artwork and all of that. You don't need more information. You need space. And so I think it was great that we had the space, you know, where we walked back to the tram. Everybody got on the tram. We were together. And then, you know, we kind of lightened the rest of the day. We saw Moshe. We saw David Pelegi at Christ Church. And so I really thought that that was, for us, kept putting the disclaimer out there that we don't know what we're doing, have a lot of grace. I thought that day actually unrolled itself in a really good way. And I had a lot of people, even old-timers, who told me they preferred doing Yad Vashem that way.
Yeah, and that was the first time ever we had the free day. Lindy and I, as we worked out the itinerary and such, she said, now on this day, we're going to have a free day. And I'm like, what do you mean a free day?
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, Eitan won't be available, or he's going to have the day off. And I was like, well, for first-timers, that'll be really difficult. What were they supposed to do? And, you know, people that have been there a number of times, they'll go to the old city or whatever. And so you and I kind of devised or laid that plan out, and we thought, okay, how are we going to get them to Yad Vashem? We don't have this bus, and then we learned of the rail system, and, okay, how do we get those tokens? You know, so we had to figure out some things, and then, you know, okay, then take the rail back into the city and then march this way and then get back to the hotel. So there were some unique ways that we had to work together. But it was an adventure. And you know,
I thought it was a great part of the trip. In fact, some of the folks on last year's trip that I've talked to in the last couple of days, when they heard about it, they go, oh, I wish I would have known, you know. And we had some free time. I was doing a little, you like the golf clap. So I was doing the little golf clap. Because usually, you know, you want everybody to get their money's worth. You want everybody to see as much as they can see and do all those kinds of things. And in doing that, you tend to guide the process very well. In this one, I think you freed it up, because on that last day we had 2 or 3 hours where people got to go out and adventure on their own. And I had a couple people tell me that was the best end of the trip for them. They loved being able to go, and some just loved being able to sit. One of our pilgrims said, I've been here a number of times, and one of the things I've always wanted to do is just sit in Christ Church and have a coffee and not have to get up and go hear somebody talk. And they got to do that. And so I thought, what a great end to the trip. You know, at first I was kind of skeptical, because we've never done the Garden Tomb early in the day like we did.
Right.
And so, but it was great. We did the Garden Tomb around 11:30. I think we finished with the worship service about 1. We went and drove past the site, and then we went to the old city, to the Jaffa Gate, where everybody was pretty comfortable with as a starting point, and let people go. And they came back after a couple hours, and they loved it.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was the perfect way, because, you know, you have this worship service, you have this emotional moment in the Garden Tomb, and then you're kind of free to explore and kind of exhale.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great...
Yeah, you and I were talking about that. How do we end up, and do we try to fit in another site?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're always praying through God's leading, His direction. And then, you know, you have a safety issue and people getting lost. So you have to really think through how much leeway or leash do you give everyone to journey into the Arab or the Muslim or the Armenian quarter or the Christian quarter. Those are the four quarters of the old city. And so, yeah, I thought that was kind of strategic.
The funny thing about it, though, is that I would say that we had the least amount of problems in terms of getting people back together after that free, where we let them go, than we did in any other time when we were in the old city where we're like, where did they go? Where are those people at?
Yeah.
So I just thought it was a great trip. I've made some notes of some things that I think on the next trip I would want to at least adjust. Or, you know, you always come back and want to critically think about how you can lead and guide people better and how you can lay things out better and what did you learn.
Yeah.
But by and large, gosh, what a good trip. And just a lot of laughter, cackling and that I really loved. I think this was probably the best attended morning devotionals on any trip we've done together. Yeah. Well, I was like, man, there's like 25 people here. Like, we have to keep pulling more sofas over to try and make seating for people to sit. And then a lot of really good sharing.
Yeah, rich discussion. And then how they embraced Jacob.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be remiss if we... Now, realize, everyone, we are at the location. When I think about that word, remiss, I'd be remiss if I... And then everyone
not to mention that we're where it happened.
Yeah, but how everyone embraced, and many that maybe have followed your or my Facebook page, the picture of Jacob celebrating his 13th birthday on the last day there, and all the men stood around him and prayed over him and shared and spoke kind, godly, encouraging words to him, and just how throughout the trip he was a little 12, now 13-year-old that had wisdom and insights and blessed so many people with some of the connections he made, his little Kesher moments, if you will, and it was great having him.
Yeah, it really did give me a... So it's kind of funny. You know, my wife equated it like this. She said, you know, there are sometimes ingredients when you're making something, you know, making a big pot of something, that you just have to put a little bit in, and it changes the way it tastes. Hmm. And she said it might seem insignificant, it might not seem important, but it can change the flavor of the entire thing. And when I came back, one of the things I said is, how do we somehow create a vision for people, you know, whether it's being able to somehow offset costs, you know, via scholarships or who knows what, young folks to come on the trip? Because one young person on the trip helped to just really enliven some people in the trip. And it also, I mean, there was not one person on the trip who didn't take it as their mission to help shepherd him through the trip. And some of them were grandparents, so whether good or bad. I mean, some of you guys fed him way too much ice cream. When he came home, his mom was like...
The dessert master.
When he came home, his mom said, we're going to get that kid walking or something because I think his pants don't fit anymore. I said, well, that was because he had Coke and ice cream, Coke for breakfast, ice cream. He had all this, you know, hot chocolate. It was on tap. But everybody took it as their mission to shepherd him. And it really brought a youthfulness to the group, too. And so, you know, and people just, it was funny because, as you said, you know, he would go and, you know, he had a little trouble with the food. So at dinner time, he would get his rice and he would get a little bit of whatever the meat was. But right away, he would get his ice cream.
Yeah.
And he became known as a dessert guy. So everybody would stop at the table and say, what's for dessert, Jacob? And he would point out, well, you know, the vanilla ice cream's pretty good and there's chocolate sauce and you get these little cake and put it in there. And so I really was just thinking, how do we in the future get people a vision, not only for themselves to come to Israel, but for their kids to come to Israel somehow? Because, listen, if we're passionate about Israel, if we're passionate about what's happening over there and the sites and all the things that are, you know, all the things, God's revelation over there, then why wouldn't we want to have an intergenerational impact in terms of that? And you're more likely, if you bring a kid over there 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 years old, having him come back because you've increased the amount of time he has between then and later in life, that he'll probably go back. He'll probably maybe take his kids if it's a really impactful trip.
Yeah. Well, and I think not only that he brought youth to, you know, our sensibilities, if you will, but the insights or the perspective. And, you know, we're on the Sea of Galilee, and he shared, you know what, that water. Because at one point, you know, the water mist, you know, from the boat hitting the waves or whatever. And he said, that water is the same water, in a sense, that Jesus walked on. So he touched that water, and that water got into the atmosphere, and that atmosphere rained down drops, and those drops refilled the water, and that water touched my face just now. And he would share things like that. We're all like, wow, full circle. You know, we are, you know, sailing on a body of water that obviously Jesus, God, created, and yet Jesus walked on those waters, as did Peter, and that was one of the lessons, and yet that very water touched his face, which, you know, reinforced or reminded him of the biblical narrative, and it was kind of a perspective that, you know, most of us would have either just not thought of or dismissed or not, you know, dealt with. But he said, wow, it's really amazing, because that water touching my face might have touched Jesus' feet in a sense. And so anyways, that was kind of special.
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, there was a lot of things, a lot of good learning things out of these trips. I think that this trip in particular for me, that I think can really help enhance future trips as we go. And, you know, maybe there's somebody out there right now who's praying up and wondering if maybe Israel is in their future. I would just say, just keep praying, because, you know, I always say this, you don't have to go 5,000 miles to hear God's voice. He's right here. He's speaking now. But sometimes, because of the things that we've created for ourselves, God needs to take us 5,000 miles and drop us in the middle of a foreign land with foreign food and all these kinds of things so that he can get our attention, because here we've built up so many walls and so many things where we don't want anybody to get our attention, let alone God. We can say it. We could say it all day long. Gosh, I want God to speak to me. I want God to speak to me. But have you built a life that is predicated upon hearing his voice, or have you not? And so just think about this for a moment, friends. Say the next trip is, you know, $3,500. That's a small price to pay to hear God's voice. That's a small price to pay to get your heart opened back up, to be able to receive from him, and to realize maybe that you've moved away from him and not towards him. So this is not, I've not even prayed up thinking about another trip.
No,
but
okay.
I'm just saying to people to begin to pray and ask God, because it's funny, the first Israel trip I went on with you, I'd been praying about that for years. You know, and always just said, well, it's probably an unattainable thing. I have four kids. I just can't see this happening. But, you know, whatever God wants to do. So.
Well, and every trip, I always say, is the last trip unless God does a stirring. And I have no dates, no concepts, no thoughts about the future. In fact, I was feeling the same way, Jason. Maybe this will be my last trip. You know, I've done it enough. I feel led of God. We don't make any profit. I think somebody had asked someone the other day, well, how much money do they make out of this? You know, we don't get paid any extra. There's no stipends. We break down the trip costs amongst the people that go on it. There's no radio funds, no donations that are used towards the trip. But I felt like we've always done it well, and we do it cheaper than any other ministry can do it. And I feel we do it effectively. So as God leads, I've always moved forward on that. But nothing, no dates, nothing for the future. But we'll see if he starts stirring the water. And
he loves
pray
to do
it up.
That.
So, well, hey, everyone, we're back. We thank God for a great trip. We thank you for your prayers. Mm. And those of you that sent loved ones, we hope they return with lots of stories and God sightings and those Kesher moments, those unique ways that they felt the scriptures fit into their lives through looking at them through new lenses or whatever. So, great to be back. Hey, by the way, great to be back, because this Thursday night we launch our Great News Radio Children's Choir 5-10 here at the Great News Radio Center. So if you have a child between the ages of 7 to 11, I know we sent out everything saying 8 to 11, but we had a couple 7-year-olds sign up. So 7 to 11, basically grades 2 through 6th. Stop by our website, greatnewsradio.org, and learn more. But we're excited to launch the Great News Radio Children's Choir to God's glory, and we already have scheduled concerts for them to participate in with the Singing Men of GNN. So you can learn more at our website, greatnewsradio.org, or get them signed up today, because it starts tomorrow, 5:10, at the Great News Radio Center here at Lincoln Square. Hey, well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.